We're not talking about punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It is Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Sayre and Elk City, America. Happy Thursday, everybody. I want to take this time right now just to wish everybody a happy 4th of July tomorrow. Be careful out there and enjoy it. I think this is going to be one of the coolest Julys in quite a while. 80 or 82 for a high tomorrow. Enjoy it. Better than 105. That's all I can say. The water's going to feel a little chilly, though. 75 degrees at Hollis, 80 at Hobart, 84 at Eric, 81 at Arnett, 80 at the May Ranch, Woodward, you're 83, Beaver's 84, Buffalo's 84, 78 at Lahoma, out here in the panhandle of Texas, 79 at Lipscomb, 70 at McLean, 76 at Wellington, 77 at Odell. All right, let's see what we got going on here. Congratulations to the Elk City Farmers Market that happened last night. What did she tell me earlier? She shot me a text. Said all the vendors were sold out in 15 minutes. Oh, imagine that. Everybody wants homegrown vegetables. And hopefully one of these nights, if I'm not behind on orders, I'll bring some tomatoes there. Kirk Feed over at Sayre, I started putting them in over there, and I'll restock them next week. But they sold out, I took 40 pounds over there yesterday, and they sold out before or right at lunch. So amazing. Okay, let's see here. I wanted to share this with you guys because you're all landowners, and it has nothing to do with cattle or horses or farm ground, but I think it's very important for all landowners to listen to this. I'm going to cut through some of it. I'm just going to kind of just give little bits and pieces of it, but it's really important, I think, to the landowners north of I-40 all the way up to Kansas and out in the Texas Panhandle. Listen to what happened here Tuesday. The Texas Supreme Court ruled on a produced water conveys to mineral lease. The Texas Supreme Court ruled last week in the Cactus Water Services LLC versus the COG operating LLC. This opinion is extremely important to all Texas landowners and Oklahoma landowners, as it was the first time the Supreme Court weighed in on who owns produced water. Now, I don't know how it's going to be in Oklahoma, but this is just something for you guys to think about. This case involved 37,000 acres of land in Reeves County. COG Operating acquired 4 mineral leases from 2 surface owners for the land. The leases grant COG the right to explore, produce, and keep oil and gas or oil and gas and other hydrocarbons. The leases make no express reference to oil and gas waste. The leases expressly prohibit any use of water except in limited circumstances where written consent is obtained from the leaser or COG drilled its own well for use on the lease, but not to be used for flooding, secondary recovery, or camp operations. COG extracted oil and gas from the Delaware Basin using hydraulic fracturing. As I know it, fracking involves injecting pressurized fluid, sand, chemicals into formations to fracture the rock and release the hydrocarbons. The most common fracking fluid is water. A portion of the fracking fluid returns to the surface mixed in with hydrocarbons, brine, and a variety of other substances like potassium, carbon dioxide, and hydrogen sulfate. At surface, COG separated the oil and gas from the water mixture, which is known as produced water. Given the health and environment hazards produced water can pose, it may be treated and disposed of in accordance with regulations. Hydrocarbons cannot be produced without generating produced water. Under the law, at the time of the conveyances, and to this day, well operator, in this case, COG, has been charged with properly handling and disposal of produced water. Regulations address storage and disposal of produced water. The court noted disposing of produced water is one of the largest operation costs for an oil well. COG entered into a number of agreements related to waste handling at their own expense. On the wells at issue, COG generated nearly 52 million barrels of produced water from December 2018 to March of 2021. COG paid nearly $21 million in disposal fee to third-party contractors. Recent technology innovations have given a new purpose to produce water, allowing it to be treated and reused as a drilling or a fracking fluid. Depending on treatment, the produced water may be able to be recycled and reused for other purposes as well. Currently, the cost of treatment exceeds the cost of disposal. Thus, COG does not reuse produced water from its operations for any purpose and receives no compensation for its use anywhere. So here's what it was. In 2019-2020, the surface owners executed lease agreements with Cactus Water Services. The agreements conveyed all right, title, and interest in and to water from oil and gas producing formations. The definition of water in the lease is narrow, meaning any and all water contained in and produced for geological formations. So COG's sued for a declaration. It was COG, not Cactus, that owned and has exclusive water rights. So according to the Texas Supreme Court, ownership of produced water depends on the scope of the language employed in the granting clauses of COG's leases, with specifically named only oil and gas. Groundwater is not part of the mineral estate unless expressly surveyed in a held surface owner subject to the manor. So in other words, guys, this could get tricky. And it's just another thing to add on to owner being complicated to be a landowner and mineral rights owner. So I would check with your lawyers. And this is on, if you want to look at this whole article, it's really long. Texas A&M AgriLife Law Blog has it on their website. So check it out. I thought I'd share that with you guys because I've always wondered about that. Never said nothing because I was working for an oil company. But I was wondering when that comes back out, how that works out. Does it work out the same as your oil and natural gas to the mineral owner, or is it a different deal? But according to the Texas Supreme Court, I guess it doesn't belong to the oil company is what they're saying, kind of. So read it, be sure and check with your lawyer. Don't call your oil company and say, Jimmy Clark on the Ag Show today says you owe me money. Don't do that, please. I love both of them. I love the oil and gas and the farming industry. So don't do that, please. The markets are open today. Let's check out the current board real quick. I have Dr. Ashley Ferris coming on from OSU in this next segment, and because it might take us the rest of the show. We're going to be talking about bugs, all kinds of insects, and corn, peanuts, cotton, wheat, vegetables. She's got updates on the leaf hoppers and the corn and stuff like that. She's really interesting to listen to. So first, and I got a Jimmy Rhodes question to ask her. You guys don't want to miss this one. All right. Right now, July soybean or July corns is 431, up 2.5. September's up 3 at 421. Soybeans for July 1055, up 4.5. Soybean meal, July 272.80, up 40. August 277.20, up 40. Soybean oil is down 24 for July at 54.82. Hard red winter wheat, July 523, up a quarter. September, 540 up or down 1.5. Oil out of West Texas down almost 50 cents at 66.97 for August. Natural gas is at 344 for August. S&P, Dow, and the NASDAQ are all trading in the green today. Let's see what's happening with live cattle. August 2/13, 37 up 92. And let's see here what we got. Feeders for August, 308.47, down 55. And September, 308.45, down 42. Lean hogs, 108.25 for July, down 140. All right. Today is the Oklahoma Farm Bureau Happy Hour, brought to you by the Roger Mills County Farm Bureau. We'll be right back after this.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
When your tractor has a flat, you're stuck. When your truck's on a construction site and a tire goes down, you're in trouble. You need help. So you call down to Blair, and they come to you. They answer the phone, and somebody comes to wherever you are to fix your problem. They carry Firestone, Michelin, and some other tires. Blair Tire and Feed, Highway 283 and 19. On-site tire service, 563-2692. 563-2692. They come to you.
As a farmer or rancher, you're always looking for ways to save time and money. The Apache Hay Wagon from Everett's Welding in Visalia, Oklahoma will help you do just that. The Apache Hay Wagon eliminates 80 to 90% of hay waste with its unique design. It hauls multiple bales, saving you time and money. Go by Everett's Welding today and ask to see the Apache Hay Wagon. You'll be glad you did. You can also visit them online at everettswelding.com.
Hay wrap is what people use in their balers, the farmers, when they want to, you know, baling up hay. It wraps it up. It's better than twine. So it's like one consistency, holds everything together, lasts longer, easier to cut off. Well, we started selling it because we got asked for it, because there's nowhere around here to really buy it, the good kind of net wrap that we have. So we found a vendor that's good price, and now we carry it. We've got it. Camrock is right south of Fred's Steakhouse in Elk City, Oklahoma.
Need precision parts done right and fast? At K4T in Elk City, we specialize in CNC machining, welding, and fabrication for the oil field as well as ag industries. We're a full-service job shop built on grit, speed, and craftsmanship. Whether it's a one-off prototype or full production, we get it done right every time. Family-owned and third-generation strong, Jason and Jamie Koss treat your job like it's their own. Stop by K4T on Merritt Road in Elk City or find us on Facebook. K4T, built on family, driven by craftsmanship.
This is the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, June 30th. 1,113 head were sold. 5 head of steers at 369 brought 470. 7 at 406 brought 450. 10 at 717 brought 338. 22 at 798 brought 310. 12 at 815 brought 313. 59 at 855 brought 294. 33 at 932 brought 286. 5 head of heifers at 490 brought 370. 4 at 546 brought 322.50. 15 at 690 brought 303.50. 14 at 845 brought 273. 8 at 949 brought 263. 17 at 949 brought 257. Butcher cows were 119 to 180. Butcher bulls brought 158 to 211. Bred cows 700 to 3450. Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Exit 71. Clinton, Oklahoma, sale every Monday at 10 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey, 580-497-6095.
Mark your calendar. July 15th, XIT Auctions will be selling 200 acres of good Ouachita County grass just north of Sentinel, Oklahoma. There's an 80-acre track and a 120-acre track, both located on Highway 44. For more information, call me, Aubrey Latham, 393-4440, or check the details out at xitauctions.com. Also selling 2 bank-owned homes, same day, same place. XIT Auctions, ready to work for you.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back. Wellington, Texas, here is your Texas Panhandle Ag Weather Update. 76, humidity's 81. Dew point 69. The winds are out of the south at 14 with wind gust up to 19. Peak wind gust today, 22 one-hundredths of an inch of rain so far in the month of July. 8-inch soil temperature, 79 degrees. Well, on the phone with me right now is Dr. Ashley Farish from OSU. She is the, I had it up a second ago because I always got to look at what all your high doc, you're an extension
entomologist.
Yeah, that's what you are.
Yeah. Systems. Yes.
Yeah, there I got it. You're in the university part. You're not on the, I guess it doesn't matter, on the OSU's extension part, or are you?
I'm on both. So my appointment is extension and research.
Okay.
So I wear both hats. Yes.
Yes, you are. So before we get into the bugs, because you're actually one of my, I'm not saying this because you're on the phone with me, you're one of my favorite people to talk to from OSU because it's cool stuff, bugs. So, and by the way, your husband was great on the show the other day. He's kind of serious. And then I talked to you, and just like, whoa, there's a little...
Well, you just got to get a beer in him, and he's good to go. But we can't do that during working hours.
So. I know. And so last year you came out to Wichita County around Sentinel to be specific,
mm-hmm.
And you were the burrow bug in cotton.
Yes.
That's what you were studying on. We call him the cotton king around here, but his actual real name is Jimmy Rhodes, right?
Yes, correct.
So, you remember what he looks like?
Yes.
And I don't need a description from you. He's not. I know. No. We all know he's not pretty, but he's.
Oh, don't say.
He's got the best wife in the world, and I actually feel sorry for her at times. But anyway, so I want you to picture this and tell me. This is a multiple choice, all right?
Oh no!
If you seen Jimmy Rhodes in a farm truck.
Mm-hmm.
Would he look better in a Ford, Dodge, or GMC?
Well, he drives a Texas edition, and as a Texan, I approve, is what I will say on that.
And that was which variety is that?
I think that was the GMC.
Yeah.
And I think it's crimson because I know he also claims to be Mr. OU. Which is an Aggie myself. I guess I'll let that slide. But I don't know. I mean, we all have preferences. I would say GMC suits him. I hope that's the right answer, Jimmy Rhodes, if you're listening.
Please forgive me
if I'm wrong.
He switched on us. He went to a Dodge the other day, so I got to give him crap.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've got my own personal feelings about Dodge, but I'm not going to share those.
Awesome. Well, let's get to the serious stuff because we got the rest of the whole show to do it. But all this wet weather has probably kept you busy with investigating what you do best.
It definitely has. So the wet weather is bringing about the weird things. And I will say you seem to bring me some of the weirdest.
Thank you. You're welcome.
It's never a dull moment with you. So really what we're seeing right now, and if we also just think about the timing that we're in for our various crops, we've got fruiting going on. We've got the production going on too. And so, it's, of course, the time where we're really concerned about what are these insects going to do for our yield. So first thing that we've really got a lot of activity in, I would say, is worms and peanuts. And this is just the traditional time frame between now up through August into September where we could really start to be seeing some worm activity. And so I know that, Jimmy, you sent me some interesting pictures, but luckily we solved, or at least we found the source for your concern.
Yes.
We had the hornworms that looked like they were coming out of your wind tunnels from your tomatoes. And that's normally what they would go after. They moved out of there, and they were going into your peanuts. And so my understanding is that should not be a concern. It's kind of a one-off thing that happened just because of having the infestations in your tomatoes and those wind tunnels. But other worms we want to be looking for right now, I would say, would be things like your different kinds of army worms. Also, the red-necked peanut worm is something that we could start to be seeing. When I've been in my own peanut trials, I'm starting to see those army worms. I also started to see some wireworms in my trials as well, too, which I've got down at the Fort Cobb Research Station.
Right. And they, speaking of the horntail worm or caterpillar mm-hmm. worm, whatever you call it, I did a little research on my own, and just so people know, Google horntail worms if you want to and take a look at them. They kind of look like a tomato worm, but they're not, and they're pretty good mm-hmm. size. But what I did learn is, I probably would have never known if I hadn't called you and then looked it up. The horntail worm is actually the hummingbird moth.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
I looked at, I was saving it for today. I wanted to be one up on you.
You did it. You got me.
Well, I first started noticing the, a long time ago, the hummingbird moth. I never knew what they looked like as a worm. But when we're on location in oil field and stuff, we got light plants running, and they mm-hmm. just swarm those light plants.
Then,
but out here in the farm side, the ag side, you'll see them. They actually do act like a hummingbird, but mm-hmm. they just got a little bit bigger body on them on the back end, so you know they're a moth.
Gotcha. Well, very cool. I definitely learned. I'll give you an honorary PhD today. Good job.
Ah, cool. Can we call me Professor Clark?
Professor Clark.
No, but it's interesting what's going on with the insects and the peanuts, and that's not the only thing going on. Everybody needs to be checking every crop they got growing right now.
Right, correct. And if we're talking about something like wireworms, which I think that we're more susceptible to in Oklahoma because of largely of our low-till or no-till practices, wireworms are something that can persist in the soil for a very long time. Some of these worms can live several years, especially when we're talking about our wireworms. And so if we think about limitations that we have right now because of EPA regulations on what we can actually put into the soil in terms of an insecticide, we fortunately for our peanut acreage, everything is irrigated, so you are able to do chemigation. The best option we have, though, is going to be something like bifenthrin, that can actually hopefully target those smaller wireworms if you have them. Of course, just like our worms that are above the soil surface, you know, when they're bigger, they're harder really to take down. And so you really do want to catch them when they're smaller so you have a better chance of that insecticide application actually working for them.
Right.
Some other things we have going on, though, Maxwell Smith let me know about some earworms that he was seeing in corn production. And when we're talking about earworms, that's something that just the biology of that insect when it gets into the corn itself, you can't exactly target it with an insecticide. That's where having that seed treatment or having that kind of genetic package or background into your corn hybrid that's going to combat against those earworms is going to be really important because you can't deliver an insecticide inside of something that is already covered up, you know, by the husk or the leaves itself that are going around that ear of corn.
Right.
But we want to talk about earworms not only because they might be an issue for us in our corn crop, but earworms basically are also, you know, bollworms too. It's the same exact species. We just call that worm the common name based on where we're actually seeing it. So it's the same thing as we would see in tomatoes. It'd be the tomato worm. And so that's Helicoverpizea is the actual species for it. So if we're seeing them in corn, just be aware that they can move into other systems, especially if you're in a region where you're growing cotton. Right now, my understanding is, and from what I've seen, we're entering into squaring. So that's one thing that, you know, maybe just keep an eye on. They might be coming out of the corn eventually, moving into the cotton. And if you're going ahead and enter into a bowl set here in a bit, then that's also something you're going to need to be watching for as well. One thing, though, I know for sure we need to be watching in cotton, though, are those cotton flea hoppers. We want to be looking and checking for square retention. If you start to see that you have these blasted squares from where the cotton flea hoppers are actually feeding, then you probably want to be thinking about an insecticide treatment.
Okay. And then, like, on the earworms, corn earworms, whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it, you know, there's a lot more corn growing west of I-35 than people realize. And
there definitely is. There's lots of pockets of it, you know. So that's the interesting thing of coming into Oklahoma is I'm realizing that, you know, when we look at where we've got on the USDA NASS maps, you know, it doesn't seem like the acreage really shows up. And it's just because it's smaller parts of that acreage, but that acreage is still pretty substantial and very important for Oklahoma crop for Oklahoma farmers and cropping systems.
Right, and there's no way there's really unless you just grab an ear of corn and peel it open to know if you've got that worm. And just like, well, I mean, it's the same worm that you helped me discover that was in my tomatoes is still, I'm in awe about today. I didn't know they was in there until I picked them.
Right. Yes. So that's where that active scouting, that active monitoring is so important. And so when we're talking about scouting for these insects, you know, being vigilant, being aware of what's going on in your fields. You know, right now we're very lucky with the kind of weather that we're having. It's not the typical heat that we're usually in at this time of year. So it's not a bad thing to be out there walking your fields. It's not as miserable as what it could be, you know, in other years.
Right.
But early detection is going to be the most important thing. So I did mention on the flea hoppers, you know, that now's the time to maybe think about if you're starting to see them and you're starting to see any kind of blasted squares or if you see that coming up in the next week or so, you want to consider an insecticide. And when you're considering that, I know it's easy to reach for something like acephate or possibly Bidrin, but I really caution against that because you should also be noticing that you're probably having a lot of beneficial insects around at this time. So if you use those are not specific just for our pest insects. Those are non-specific, non-target. They'll go on to things like our lady beetles, their larvae, as well as onto parasitoids that can really help us to control populations of our pest species. So using something like Diamond or Carbine or Centric is something that I would actually suggest if you have flea hoppers to go ahead and use that. It's going to be softer and more gentle on those beneficials so you're not knocking out that natural control.
Ashley, you got an extra minute? We need to take a break and come back. We'll keep on talking about this.
All right.
All right. We're going to take a Oklahoma Farm Bureau break brought to you by the Roger Mills County Farm Bureau. If you guys got any question for Dr. Ferris while we're here talking about these insects and stuff, because we're not quite done. And also, we'll give out an email that you can email her to talk to her about any sophisticated stuff you got going on or chemicals, and she's really good at what she does. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, farmers. It's Kent Watkins with SEI Agritech in Elk City, Oklahoma. It's time to plant summer cover crops. We carry the best quality cover crop seeds available. If you need ag chemicals, we can ship bigger orders straight from the warehouse to your farm with unbeatable prices. And as always, we're an authorized livestock nutrition center dealer. Call us, visit us on South Randall in Elk City, and follow us on Facebook. SEI Agritech, your partner in productivity.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey folks, this is EJ Gredeman with ASCO Equipment out of Elk City, Oklahoma. If you need rental equipment, I got your back. From excavators to wheel loaders, telehandlers, and forklifts, we rent the brands that you know and trust. With flexible terms, responsible service, and expert support, we're here to keep your job on track. Need equipment? We're on it here at ASCO Equipment. Visit ASCOEQ.com or stop by our Elk City branch, 513 West 20th here in Elk City, Oklahoma, or you can just give me a call, 580-243-9233. Appreciate it, folks, and y'all have a blessed day.
I've had several clients when we're sitting in a closing room. We're signing the final pieces of paper, and we slide the keys across the desk and tell them, congratulations, you're a homeowner, and they're just elated. They're thrilled. They finally realize that their dream came true. They were actually able to own a home, and the children are in there with them. And they're like, I get to go get in my new room. It's for the whole family to enjoy. They're very excited to own a home. I'm Joe Shepard, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sarah.
Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Every farmer and rancher knows nutrition is key when it comes to getting the best out of every animal. High Pro Feeds has built their reputation on providing the best nutrition possible. Their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. High Pro is a name you know and trust. Buy the best and get the results you deserve. Hobart Farm and Garden is your trusted High Pro Feeds dealer providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, or sacks. Visit them online at hobartfarmandgarden.com.
Valley Center pivots are the most durable and reliable you can find. But when you do need replacement parts, your operation deserves the best. Valley Genuine Parts. Knutson Irrigation has been serving growers since 1981, and their experienced service technicians stand behind every part in their fully stocked warehouse. They also service other pivot brands. So when you need fast service and reliable parts, you need Knutson Irrigation. Call them for service or visit KnutsonIrrigation.com for more info.
That life insurance that I have on myself, it's not for me. It's for my wife, that she doesn't have to sell the home. She doesn't have to go worry about how am I going to make this car payment? How am I going to come up with the cost out of pocket to pay this funeral? Because, you know, that's an expensive cost. And it's a cost that you're going to have. If you had a machine in your garage that made money, it was a money-making machine. You went out every day and you flipped the switch on that machine and it generated money to pay your bills. Would you insure that machine? I've never had anybody say no. Sure they would. Well, you are that machine. You flip your switch on every morning when you get up. You flip your switch on when you go to work. But yet we don't insure ourselves. It doesn't make any sense to me. Hi, I'm Mickey Lively. I'm an insurance agent with Oklahoma Farm Bureau. My office is located in Greer County. Call me anytime at 580-782-3827.
Life insurance and annuity products offered through Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company. Property and casualty products are offered through Oklahoma Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance and affiliated companies.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back. Here's your northwestern Oklahoma ag weather update. 83 at Alva, dew point 71, humidity 67. The winds are out of the southeast at 11, 98 one-hundredths of an inch of rain in the last 10 days. 81 is the three-day average, 4-inch bare soil temperature. Sunset at 8:57. 20% chance of rain at 89 today. 71 for a low tonight, 20%. Tomorrow, chances double, 40% chance of thunderstorms on the 4th of July, and 87 for a high. On the phone with me from Stillwater, America, is Dr. Ashley Ferris from the OSU, and we're talking bugs today. Hello?
I am there, yes. Yeah, so I guess if we want to talk about one more bug that is causing us an issue and has made its appearance back in Oklahoma this year, I would say it's the corn leafhopper. So we received reports through some agronomists that work with Bayer to let us know, hey, we possibly have something down in Choctaw County. So we're talking just south of Hugo, which is basically there at the Red River. So what we found is that there are corn leafhoppers that were detected there back about a week ago. I went down, visited that site, and that producer went ahead and he sprayed Savanto Prime through an aerial application at a 7-ounce rate. And when I went down there, I collected nymphs. I saw other leafhoppers, but no corn leafhoppers. But we have been out pulling traps around the area. Other areas we're scouting in Oklahoma, we did confirm them yesterday around the Fort Cobb region. So the corn leafhopper is out and about. We're learning more information about this insect in terms of thinking about how our hybrids that we have in Texas and Oklahoma versus in places where this insect is endemic, so Argentina and Brazil and Mexico, our hybrids are different from what we have in the non-U.S. market. And so maybe we need to think about protecting our corn crop a little later than what we were thinking before. So our guidance before was if you saw the corn leafhopper, you need to be applying an insecticide, and I'll give some recommendations in a moment, up through the V8 stage. After the V8, then you shouldn't have a problem with that corn stunt disease, which is associated with the pathogens this insect can transmit.
Well, they,
however,
yeah, go ahead, sorry.
We're thinking that you probably need to be applying insecticides up through R1. And really right now, that's the best guess. More research and information is needed to see how long do we actually need to protect from that insect before those pathogens can accumulate. But go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, that was going to be my question, and you covered it right there. At what stage, though, do you start applying that insect?
So for applying an insecticide, right now there's no economic threshold for this pest. And it's just because it's such an efficient vector of the pathogens that cause corn stunt disease. So If you see one, I don't like this because of the it's not integrated pest management, but it is the thing that we need to be doing right now. Go ahead and spray when you see a corn leaf hopper. Now, I want to stress, it's important to note that just because you see a leaf hopper doesn't mean it is a corn leaf hopper. So, Jimmy, maybe I can send you some links to some things where I've talked about identification of it. But basically, the corn leaf hopper is a very small insect. You need to have a hand lens in order to be able to identify it. To scout it, right now, if we're talking about corn that's in the reproductive stage, it's going to be on the undersides of your corn leaves. You're going to want to walk into a field of corn, basically stand still for a good while, then start looking on the undersides of leaves, being very careful not to disrupt the leaves that you're standing around. That's why I say go in there, stand still for a moment, look about chest height, and then start inspecting for these small insects that are yellow to tan in color. If you can collect some, I would say then stick them in the freezer. You can collect them with a little hand vacuum. You can collect them with a net. I've got consultants that are collecting them by their own hands. Take a picture of the backside of that insect, the underside of that insect, and then look for the features. They have two dots between their eyes with a light yellow or white halo around those two dots. Their face is completely clear. There's no other markings on the insect except for those two dots. So that's where identification is really important because we have other leaf hoppers that don't cause us problems in our crops. The corn leaf hopper is the only one that we're concerned about right now in corn causing us issues.
Yes. So from my understanding from you and other, and some agronomists, as the leaf hopper does affect early season corn, but nowhere near as bad as they do the late season corn.
Correct. And this year's kind of concerning. Wheat harvest was delayed, and so that means also double cropping was delayed as well, too. When this news came in, it was basically about the same time that we got wheat out of the fields in a lot of the areas that were considering double cropping corn. So if you are planting double crop corn, I would highly encourage you to be out scouting right now. If you see a corn leaf hopper, then insecticide options that you have for you in terms of foliar applications are going to probably be the best bets of Savanto at a 7-ounce rate and then also possibly Steward at a higher rate. So Steward, I would say probably 9 to 10 ounces if you're thinking of a foliar application. Now, this information is based out of Texas A&M AgriLife Research. They were able to do some insecticide trials over the last few weeks coming out of South Texas. And so what they saw is that if they applied both of these, they're getting fairly good suppression. And I'm saying suppression, not control, because it's really hard to get that insecticide into the whirl of those plants where those corn leaf hoppers like to reside when we're talking about vegetative corn. And so inspecting those whorls to find the leaf hoppers is going to be really important. And then making sure that you're actually taking the time to use the appropriate nozzles and also a high enough carrier amount to make sure that you're getting good, thorough coverage in that application. You may need to have multiple applications. So right now I can't answer the question and neither can the researchers out of A&M into how long the efficacy of these products are. And it's just because we don't know just yet, but those are the two that we're recommending at this time.
I got you. I wonder if it's better to do it through your irrigation system versus having it sprayed, you know, with your sprayer or aerial spray. I wonder. I guess you don't know right yet, do you?
Yeah, we don't know. And so think about just the biology of this insect is it darts, it moves around quickly. Think about the stage of the corn, especially on reproductive corn.
Where'd you go? I lost you for a second. Dr. Ferris, are you there?
Me?
There, I can hear you now.
Okay, all right, great.
Did you move?
I don't know. I've been sitting in my office here across from the football stadium.
Okay, so. Well, you're loud and clear now.
Okay, great. So we just don't know. The biology of this insect is very different from the last invasive insect we had, which was the sugarcane aphid. So thinking about where they reside, reproductive corn, they're going to be on the underside, you know, of the leaves, already kind of tricky to get an insecticide to them when they're hiding there. The reproductive corn like that, vegetative corn, when they're down in the whorls, then it can also be tricky to get a good delivery of that insecticide to them too. What we do know, based on studies out of A&M, is that dimethoate doesn't seem to be doing too well. Don't waste your time on a pyrethroid. They're also not effective right now on a leafhopper. Transform seems to have okay-ish knockdown, but in terms of like efficacy and how long it's residual, I would say, lasting in the field, not doing so great. So the best two front runners at this time will be Savanto Prime and will be your Steward.
I got you. Awesome. That's good information to have. Mm-hmm. And they, yeah, because the leafhopper, have they figured out where, how it got here? Did they even know?
Right now, we know that it is endemic to Mexico. It's highly likely that that South Texas, and when I talk about South Texas, I'm talking about Weslaco, the lower Rio Grande Valley, likely where that insect is going to be able to reproduce. It only reproduces in corn. Down there, they have volunteer corn and corn production basically persisting over and over throughout the year, so a nice resource to be able to reproduce. And then it just moves up gradually. So as Texas enters into planting, they've got this nice gradient of corn that's coming up the state. We start planting, it starts, you know, riding the wave of the corn that's growing and progressing up through the Great Plains. So it could be a very severe issue. We think about how changing temperatures change when we go ahead and we plant. So if it's warmer, we plant earlier because of that opportunity to do so. But we may be allowing for insects, and this is one of them in general, to be able to come up earlier and reach areas that maybe it wouldn't have reached before, because we're allowing this kind of bridge, this green bridge, to be built and brought them up northward. So I would expect over the next 10 to 12 days, just based off their life cycle and what I observe in my own, I have a colony of these leafhoppers in my lab, we should start to see greater numbers of them. So it'll, good news is they'll be easier to scout. Bad news is there's higher potential to have issues with corn stunt disease that will start to show symptoms about 3 to 4 weeks after the plants are infected.
Well, I know they're a pain in the you know what, because last year a couple of the guys that I know out here in Beckham County, their their yields were cut in half or more.
Yes, I have talked to cooperators where there is documented anywhere between 10 to 55% yield loss that we have seen. So I will be doing insecticide trials myself. To do an insecticide trial, I have to have the insect present. So now that the insect is here, I've got corn going in the ground. I will go ahead and be doing my trials from the end of July through August, where I'm going to be testing out 14 different products, and some of them are at different rates. And so I'll be sharing that information at upcoming meetings, hopefully have it all in place where I can share it at the Fort Cobb field day that we'll be having, I believe, sometime in September. So I'll keep y'all in the loop on what we find from that.
So do you go get your EUs at those meetings so you have your pesticide license?
I do. So I don't claim my own talk or anything on it, but yes, anytime I'm at one of those meetings, I'm signing in right with y'all as well, so I can keep up with my certification. So.
Yeah, because I know I got the ag guy from the Department of Agriculture, Oklahoma's department. He's always listening. He's waiting for somebody to mess up.
So, oh, no. Yep. No,
no, I'm kidding, Richard.
Well.
But before we move to the last subject I want to talk to you about is, you know, when you were down there at Hugo, you're in the home of the Boggy Creek Monster, a.k.a. Sasquatch, a.k.a. Bigfoot. You know that, right?
I did. It was really interesting to drive over there because I was like, huh, this is like the swampy kind of area that people talk about. And I will say I also went ahead and drove across the Red River real quick to say, hey, I'm home, and then drove back on the way to Stillwater.
Oh, did you really? How cool was that? Where are you from in Texas? I forgot.
I'm from Central Texas, so I'm from Georgetown, Texas. If you think of Georgetown, Texas today, it is not the same place that it was when I grew up. Today, it's very similar to Austin. Growing up, it was still a lot of farming communities and everything. I spent a lot of time in Taylor. I've got grandparents and family that live in Temple, Texas. That's my mom's side. So a big farming area there before it started to turn into more of Killeen and Waco and Fort Hood. And then the other side of my family, where we've got our family ranch, is out in Cherokee, Texas. Real small town outside of Llano on Highway 16. It's It's beautiful. It's the true Texas Hill Country, my favorite place in the world.
Oh, I bet so. That is beautiful country down in there. And, yeah, I read a deal the other day where somebody said that Texas was losing 4,000 acres a day to buildings.
Yes, it makes me sick. I can't hide my feelings on that one.
And no, nobody can.
Some people call it progress, but it makes me sad every time I go home.
So, yeah. Yeah. Well, I actually got a couple questions, and I'm trying to time this so where I go to my last break, we'll be done with you. So I'm got about 3 or 4 more minutes with you.
Okay.
Stink bugs.
Yes. So for stink bugs, what I've got going on right now is I would say, first of all, start watching for them whenever you've got, if you're in cotton. For flowering, same also for soybeans. So I've got some research going on with a graduate student right now that's looking at the thresholds that we use for when to go ahead and spray based on stink bug activity. Some data from Josh Lawson, OSU agronomist, is showing that in soybeans, we have really long periods of time, and we're talking several weeks, where we've got this stink bug just below the current economic threshold for the state. And when they're in the field for that long and that persistent, it's highly likely that they're causing damage. The other thing about this insect is that it is one of those that is very patchy in its distribution. So part of that is because of their behavior. So when eggs are laid, they're laid in clusters, they emerge, the nymphs don't have wings, so they're going to kind of cluster in one group. And then you're likely going to find patches of them. So if you're walking your field, you could very easily miss one of the patches of the insect. So we want to know, do we need to maybe lower that threshold and see that we actually get better yields from our soybeans? In cotton, this is interesting because we've also got ThriveOn technology coming in. Research from some of my colleagues out of Tennessee is showing that there may be some activity for ThriveOn against stink bugs. And I stress the word may because we need more research on this. But it seems to possibly disrupt the feeding of stink bugs. We know already that it is causing early season thrips to not want to be, feeding on the ThriveOn cotton. It's not like the other gene technology that we've got in cotton where it's going to kill the insect. Instead, the insect is still going to be present, but it's just not going to actually be feeding. And so that's kind of the hard thing to get our minds around. If we're thinking about ThriveOn cotton, you may not necessarily need to be looking for numbers of insects. You need to be quantifying what's happening based on the damage that's actually occurring to that plant, just because of the way that ThriveOn technology works against insect pests.
I can just imagine what all you universities get together with all these bug people. I want to go and just watch, not listen, just watch.
No, we know how to have a good time is what I will say to you. But yeah, we get some pretty interesting conversations and some pretty interesting stories as well too. So yeah, but that's what I'm going on with stink bugs. The other thing I'm going to be doing is some more trials. I work with Syngenta and a couple of other industry partners. Right now they're wanting me to continue to test Plinazolin, which they recently just had a trade name come out for it. That product's not yet available, but it just went through the comment period. I believe that comment period just closed or is about to close. What I've seen out of that technology is that it actually works really well for controlling stink bugs. It's also soft on beneficials. It's a new mode of action. The active ingredient is isocycloserum, so it'd be really nice to have one other tool in our toolbox when it comes to controlling these pests.
Hey, have you seen any grasshoppers over there by Stillwater?
Oh, my gosh. I was at Perkins earlier this week, and I saw a ton of nymphs, and I said out loud to the people that were with me, and I was like, now's the time to get them. So grasshoppers are out. I want to say also, though, that I saw high numbers of them back in March, but, I mean, they're right now, at least at Perkins, they're continuing and entering a new life cycle. So spray them while they are small. Orsine is a really good option for that control.
Yes. Yeah, and I seen this morning, I went out looking for, so what I do with the army worms and peanuts is really the best way. I mean, unless you want to go out there at midnight with the black light, the best way is just go out there and just randomly, like in a 30-acre field, I pulled five plants. And when you pull those plants, those army worms are already in the ground right there by that plant. And that's what I found out last year. And there's another cycle of grasshoppers going on right now. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I just don't think that we got, I know everybody talks about those rains, and this year people are like, I think that's an old wives' tale. And I wouldn't say that. I do think it still matters about timing of rains and other things, but this is a weird year. We're going to forget about this year because we may not have another wet year like this, you know, in another 7 years. And then we'll forget all about it. We'll be like, this never happens again. But it will come back around.
Oh, yeah. You know, it'll come. And this myth, about more water kills grasshoppers, that's out the door for sure this year. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for coming on. I got to take my last break or I'll run out of time. And and we'll enjoy it. And if you come up with any new stuff, you're more than welcome on my show anytime.
Great. Thank you so much. And I just want to give a quick plug. We're planning the Panhandle Crops Field Day tour for August 21st. We're going to talk a lot about corn. We're going to talk about sorghum. We're going to talk about weed control. And we're also going to be talking about some cotton up there, too. So if y'all can join us, that'd be great. Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
All right. Happy 4th of July.
Yes, you too. Bye.
Bye. Okay, here we go. Let's take our last break. We'll be right back after this.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na fishing! Fishing.
Get ready, Elk City. The 11th annual KECO Kids Fishing Derby and Presidio Family Day is back Saturday, July 19th at Ackley Park from 8 a.m. to noon.
Let's go fishing.
Kids 15 and under can cast their lines in a pond fully stocked with fish. And don't forget the prize fish. Catch a marked one, and you could win $100.
All right!
No pole, no problem. The Oklahoma Fish and Wildlife Team has you covered with fishing poles and bait, plus free T-shirts while they last. And the fun doesn't stop at noon. Presidio Family Day keeps rolling with the carousel and putt-putt open until 1 p.m. So mark your calendar, pack your sunscreen, and join KECO at Ackley Park for a fantastic day of fishing and family fun at the 11th annual KECO Kids Fishing Derby, Saturday, July 19th.
This season, Army Worm, better watch out. Because your wheat is protected by Lumavia CPL insecticide seed treatment with a unique mode of action that starts at the seed, then moves through the plant to protect it from roots to shoots for strong stand establishment and better yield potential. Army worms, you're out of here. Learn more at corteva.us/LumaviaCPL.
When you're out working in the shop and the garage this summer, stay comfortable with a Portacool Apex cooler. Napa Auto and Truck Parts in Elk City, Weatherford, and Hinton has compact spot coolers for the garage. They've also got high-powered units that cool up to 6,500 square feet. Each unit blasts cool air up to 60 feet and connects to your phone with the CoolSync app for remote control. They're quiet, efficient, and tough with a lifetime warranty on molded housings. Swing by your local Napa and get your Portacool Apex cooler and stay comfortable while you work this summer. Night drivers want two things. All the hours you can legally get, but with set schedules so you can have a life outside of work. Canyon Oil Field gives you both. All the hours you can legally handle, but set shifts. You'll be home 90% of the time if you want. If you don't mind traveling, you'll get per diem and stay in nice hotels. Canyon Oil Field Services doesn't have any downtime because they've got 4 yards in Oklahoma and they rotate drivers through those locations. They got lots of stability and lots of work for you. Besides offering oil field pay, Canyon pays 100% of employee health insurance. They also have a 401k plan with company match, up to 3 weeks paid vacation, and they give safety bonuses. Canyon Oilfield Services is hiring night drivers in Elk City right now. They're also hiring lead mechanics. Apply online at canyonoilfield.com, then click careers. It's what drivers want. Lots of dependable hours to work, but with set schedules. At Canyon Oilfield Services, the keyword is service.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back. I'm out of time already. It's crazy. Let's do a quick Hobart Farm and Garden Ag Weather update real quick before I run out of time altogether. Hollis, 74, dew point 69, humidity's 86, winds out of the south at 14, 92 one-hundredths of an inch of rain in the last 10 days, 8:56 is the sunset, 50% chance of thunderstorms today, 50% chance tonight, 69 for low, and tomorrow, Independence Day, 40% chance of thunderstorms and 87 for a high. How about that? All right. You guys have a wonderful 4th of July. We'll see you Monday. No show tomorrow. Hey, go to your feed stores today because they're going to be shut down tomorrow and Saturday, guys. It's the Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre. God bless.